Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
Welcome to the Lovejoy Hour, sponsored by Cooker, 100 degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. I suppose after the cooker is the best invention in the kitchen, as regular listeners know. My tap also does chilled filtered water and chilled sparkling filtered water. I love it. It's a tap. It's called a cooker. It's spelled Q-U-O-O-K-E-R. No buying bottled water for me. Oh no, it comes straight out of my kitchen tap. For more details, go to cooker.co.uk. Cooker, Q-U-O-O-K-E-R. Today's guest is one of those guests where you can actually say, this guest needs no introduction. What I'm doing today for an hour is 15 questions to Jason Donovan. The only bit of trivia I will give you is Jason entered Neighbours as Scott Robinson in 1986. He's been famous ever since. What a roller coaster of a ride. What a roller coaster. That was the word I was looking for, of a ride Jason's had. What a career. Let's meet him, Jason Donovan. Jason, morning. Welcome to the
morning podcast.
Thank you for joining me today. How are you today?
Tim, I'm well. You know, I've just dropped the kids off to school and a little bit bunged up. The weather at the moment is quite, you know, sort of claustrophobic and moist. I like to call it moist.
You know what? There's a lot of hay fever. I've never had hay fever.
Yeah, there is.
I've got it. So yeah. I looked it up. Apparently, climate change means we're all going to have hay fever from now on. So,
well, I think because last year we had quite a dry sort of spring, and this year it's been not so dry. And then we had that sort of burst of nice weather a week or so ago, and I think the compression and the clouds, and it's like it's not clean air at the moment. It's sort of, you know, it feels claustrophobic a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. How are you getting on with the work? You've got two projects on at the moment, aren't you? You're producing and you're actually in Joseph again. How are you juggling your time? Is it all good at the moment?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, I have to say at the moment, mate, I'm obsessed by sport. You know, last night, I was flicking between the tennis and the football. I didn't know which way to go. You know, I'm a big tennis fan. I love Wimbledon. In terms of work, yes. Look, it's been a very quiet sort of 12 months. It's nice to be busy. I mean, my role in both those things is quite peripheral, but I quite enjoy that, Tim. You know, I'm sort of 53 now, and you know, I think we talked about this before. You know, the idea of 8 shows a week and coming home on a Saturday night, Sunday morning, having to go into physio, exhausted, and then go back to work on Monday sort of doesn't do it for me as much as it did. You know, I don't want to be punished for my currency. So, you know, something like Joseph is perfect for me. I come out of, you know, it goes into act two, you know, I sing for 15 minutes. I get the adulation like it was back in 1989 and I disappear backstage and wait for the encore. I mean, and I come home on a Saturday night, relatively in good tact. In terms of Priscilla as a producer, I'm not the lead producer. I guess my role to a certain degree, you know, is to bring a certain profile to a product that I know really well. You know, I did it in 2011 in the West End. There was discussions back in 1996 or 95 about me doing the film. In fact, the original lineup was Michael Hutchins, myself, and Richard E. Grant. Mm-hmm. So there's a pedigree there. I wanted to be more than just a sort of stunt producer, as it were. So I said to Mark Goucher, who's got the show, I said, look, I'll do it, but I want to get some investors, and I want to be at marketing meetings, and I want to be hands-on. I want to learn more about this. So that's been, you know, it's been interesting. I mean, the tough thing about Priscilla was that we were up and running, and then of course the pandemic hit, and then we had to close, and now we've just sort of reopened again. But,
weird, isn't it? The old pandemic. It's just been such a massive thing in all our lives. By the way, I'm 53 years old. And I am. It's really weird because I do know you because you've been on my show a load of times. But I feel like you've been part of my life. In 1986, when you joined Neighbours, I had the mullet haircut as well.
Did you?
It's like I feel like we've gone on this same path, apart from you've had a really successful career and mine came in a little bit later. But my favourite ever thing was when I first started trying to work in TV, I remember someone once insulting me and saying, someone in the industry, when you're just a shit Jason Donovan. And I just, and that has always amused me. That always amused me.
I think all that's turned around in your favor, Tim, you know. you're doing very well. Thank you very much. Look, I mean, all careers, all lives, you know, go up and down. And, you know, I think maybe like yourself, I feel very lucky, you know, in doing something I love and I'm passionate about it. I don't think about going to work. I enjoy my time with the people that I work with, and surely that's got to be one of the great gifts. We've all been, notwithstanding the mullet and the fact that you've been cross-referenced about me, you know, once before, it's a gift to be able to have that, you know, and to make money from it and a living. You know.
Yeah, exactly right. I always feel privileged with my career. I keep telling my daughters, because I had jobs in clothes shops and bars and in finance and all sorts of different things, and so I really appreciate working in TV. And I keep telling my daughters, the one thing you've got to do is try and find a passion and something you love, because then, you know, that classic, you know, if you find a job you love, you never have to work again. I never hate going into Sunday brunch or doing any of the work that I do. So it's always a privilege. So
when did it turn for you? When was the moment that you sort of felt you've got your momentum in something you wanted to be and do?
I think it was about 94. I got a job on the Big Breakfast as a researcher, and I couldn't believe it.
You were a researcher.
Yeah, I hassled them, saying it was
Planet 24. Sebastian.
Sebastian.
Oh, he lives around the corner. Yeah, and Henrietta.
That's it.
Well, you know,
Sebastian and Henrietta, that, you know, and they gave me a job there, and I was just, well, Sebastian gave me the job, and I couldn't actually believe I was working with Chris Evans and Paula Yates and all that lot. I couldn't believe I was part of the industry, and it was just so exciting. And from then, it's just, you know, carried on. So longevity is what I have, I think, in my career. But you, that is your career is unbelievable. What a roller coaster. I was just looking you up on Wikipedia just before we did this, just to see, remind myself, my God, your career is, someone's got to make a film of it, because you've had massive highs and massive lows. But it's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really look at it like that. I mean, I guess because there's a lot of things I would still like to do and would have loved to have done. You know, I always say, you talk about your kids, one of the worst things you can do in your life is sort of compare yourself to other people. But as human beings, we sort of do, don't we? You know, yeah. I was obsessed in the sort of the 90s thinking I could write that sort of album like a George Michael record, you know, where you just go, wow, what a piece of work. And then you get to certain ages, you go, I'll do it by the time I'm 32. And then, of course, 32 surpasses you and you haven't done it. So I think, I guess for me, I've just always wanted to work. You know, I've always felt probably I was more of a natural actor than I was singer. But something about music, you know, back in the late 80s in Melbourne, you know, in Neighbours, just sort of caught my imagination. And then I saw what was happening with Kylie. And then I sort of decided to jump on that train. I think one of the things that I don't regret in life, because I think it's a wasted emotion, is that I probably should have explored more of my acting film roles, and I sort of turned some things down because, you know, I was more obsessed by becoming a pop star at the time. And why wouldn't you? Because it was happening. So you just go with that, you know, sort of momentum. And yeah, I mean, the catalog's pretty good. I've done lots of theatre work, probably 30 or 40 live shows. I've done, you know, TV from, you know, film and dramas to Neighbours through to miniseries. I've done some radio for 10 years on a heart. So it's a really mixed career. And I don't know how I feel about it looking back. You know, you create your own luck in life. Timing is everything, I believe, very much. You know, you got to work hard. I keep saying that to the kids, you know, and, you know, I still get anxious about jobs, and I think that sort of keeps me on my toes. I'm lucky. I've got a good house, and I think I've invested well. But you always want more. It's weird. It's sort of weird, you know, not in a selfish way, but maybe just to sort of, you know, calm me down sometimes. I like to keep out there and keep busy and making money and, you know, have the nice things that we can afford and, you know. So yeah.
All right, Jason, we're supposed to be doing 15 questions. We'll never get through them all, but let's just see if we can hack away at a few of them. Well, first question, what one piece of advice would you like to give our listeners that has been invaluable to your life?
I think the thing that's probably kept me on track the most is physical fitness. I'm quite a nutter for activity. And I watch my dad, my dad's 86, I think. He still does 30 or 40 laps of the Harold Holt Memorial Pool in Australia. Ironically, the Harold Holt Memorial Pool was named after a drowned Australian Prime Minister.
Wow.
That's kept me, I think there's a connection between physical fitness and mental health. You know, we're on that mental health sort of thing at the moment. You know, I was in some pretty dark days in the 90s. I was enjoying myself, you know, but on retrospect, they probably weren't my best moments. But I came through those because I always knew, you know, I could get a buzz from swimming or riding my bike or... that I've never lost that sense of you know, physical fitness and also hard work, I think is another thing that I would tell tell myself. Be prepared to make mistakes, you know, try not to keep, you know, aiming for perfection. Sometimes I always found that with music, you know, I was always trying to be the perfect recording singer, and actually just go for it, you know, make those mistakes, be who you want to be. I like to laugh. I don't laugh enough. But work and physical exercise.
I think physical exercise is so important. Right. What's the best moment of your career? Jesus Christ, that's going to be hard.
I'm going to be very diplomatic here, Tim, and say I hope it's yet to come.
Okay.
Yeah, but you know, there was nothing like having a number one record with Too Many Broken Hearts back in the late 80s. That was a really, you know, number one record and number one album, because I just thought it would never happen, and it did, and it started to just take on a different life. You know?
The next question is, what's the worst moment in your career? What's interesting about that is there was a stage where the media decided to pick on you, didn't they? And they were all going for you, and it must have been quite hard, because it was, you know, just post the I can't remember what year it was. It was just before I started working on The Big Breakfast, so it must have been early 90s. And
93, 90, 90. Well, I did Joseph 91 to 92, probably about 93, 94.
Yeah, and people started to, and I served you in a restaurant. And it was funny because I'd known you as from Neighbours and Joseph, and it'd been the success. And then the media were going, "Ah, Jason Donovan, he's in trouble in dark places." And I served you at a restaurant, and everyone said, "It was Joe's Cafe." I don't know if you remember, in Brompton Cross. And and you were in there, and someone said afterwards, "What was he like?" I said, "Do you know what? He was so lovely. You were so polite.
Oh, cool.
You were beaming. You were smiling." And that was one of the first times I realized what the press tell you is so far removed from reality. Because, you know, if you'd read the press, you would think you were basically, you know, sitting under your duvet in a house somewhere shaking. But you were busy doing your life.
Well, I had a big court case, which wasn't my, you know, greatest moment. And, you know, I probably would have approached that very differently in hindsight now. You know, success, how do you measure success? How do you process all that stuff that you go through when you're put under a spotlight like I was? And remember, I was a solo act once I left Neighbours. It's not like you had bandmates or teammates in a football you can sort of share your experiences with. You know, it's ironic when you get to 23 and your dreams sort of come true, then what do you do? Do you know what I mean? It was sort of, you know, it was a weird time for me. And I always said sort of in my 92, 93 till probably the end of that decade was a bit of a car crash, but I now know what I don't want to do, which is great, because that part of, you know, drugs and, you know, parties and going to Brown's nightclub and Groucho and you know, Notting Hill and, you know, all the sort of the stuff that happens, you know, as part of that 90s sort of grunge type of rebellion era, as I sort of call it, you know, there's moments there that I just wish didn't happen. But at the same time, as I said to you, I now know where I want to be.
Jason, I think it's really hard for you guys, because I was in all those places as well, even though I was working restaurants. And what I always remember is when you see the Australians come over, it was you and Natalie and Brulia and Carly and stuff like that. And when you see them all in the clubs, it's like the reality stars of now. You are so famous from Neighbours when you came over that everyone gravitated towards you. It was so funny because there was the British stars who we saw a lot. Then you lot would pop in. Everybody wanted a piece of Kylie, Jason, Natalie, whatever. And everyone in the club was like looking at you guys. I don't know if you realize you were like the goldfish in the goldfish bowl. And people wanted a piece of you.
Yeah, it's a funny thing with Australians. I've always said the English find it really difficult to know where to pitch us, you know, because you have the class system here. And, you know, Australians are a society built on merit, meritocracy, you know. And I did Who Do You Think You Are? And I found this really interesting to study how Australia sort of came to itself. That, I mean, that's another story, and you should watch the actual film because it's really interesting, that idea between the convict and the captain. Because when we all got shifted all those 250 years ago, once you'd been in prison, you know, we're on this island in the middle of nowhere. Whether you were aristocratic or you're from the East End and you've stolen some bread, everyone had to get on because there was no the numbers outweighed the governorship of you know, the control. So, you know, the governor needed his people to make, you know, the farm work or Sydney work. So it just integrated into this really interesting society. I mean, you know, fast forward to the Neighbours, you know, phenomena here. And I guess, again, because it's a bit like the cricket and the sport and the tennis is, you know, the Aussies, you know, don't fit into any sort of class system yet. You know, people, I don't think the English know how to pitch them. I really don't think they know. And Neighbours was just, you know, again, another phenomena. And quite unique in its sort of quirkiness and, you know, as a show and as a drama, you know, it was very different from anything you guys have ever experienced before. It wasn't slick like an American. It wasn't dark and, you know, like EastEnders and Coronation Street. It was a sort of breath of fresh air with a bunch of young, new talent. And, you know, yeah, other than that, it just changed my life.
Yeah, but it's one of the questions which we might as well do now is what is it like to be famous? I always the point I was making, I always think when people are criticizing Justin Bieber, I'm like, you try and be that famous when you're young and everyone wants a piece of you. You can have whatever you want, and don't tell me you're going to be the perfect model human. It's just not fair because it's such a strange thing. And when you lot all came over, you were treated like royalty. You were just loved so much. Everyone wanted a piece of you. It must have been quite a overwhelming experience. What is it like to be famous?
Well, I would say to you this. I never got into the business. Let's start here to be famous. That's where probably I've become famous, because I started with a father who was a working actor. My mum, my parents divorced when I was young. My mum was in the entertainment business. She was a newsreader. So, you know, and I had a passion. You know, I remember being in my English class, you know, in Australia in 1985, and rather than doing a written assessment, I did an oral one, and one of those pieces was doing a transcript from a play in front of, you know, the class, and Kevin Burke, I think was the teacher's name, came up to me and said, I'm going to see you on Parkinson one day, and this was in 1985, and so I and not that my destiny was ever going to be on a chat show, but I had a passion for acting. It gave me a buzz, you know, and then Neighbours came along, and it's about, you know, using those moments to your best advantage. You know, I can't stand when people say, I don't like X Factor or, you know, that person from here, that reality show. What a load of crap. You know, Guy Pearce started in Neighbours. Russell Crowe was in Neighbours. Ben Mendelsohn, Margot Robbie, you know, look at the One Direction guys in X Factor. We all need a platform in which we do to be able. It's the long distance runners, the ones that are still here. That's what matters. They say it's not how you begin the race, it's how you finish the race. And also, what does that all matter in the thing of life with kids and family and what is it? How do you measure success? I always keep asking this question to myself. And how many bedrooms in a house do you need, really, honestly? I mean, you've only got to clean the bloody lot anyway. You know,
I think
so. You know, I go back to, you know, my passion. for my craft. What happened with Neighbours, I don't know how it worked, but what I can tell you is there was a lot of chemistry between the younger members. We all came into that show with a bit of experience. We didn't just come in fresh, so we got our legs with that apprenticeship. The thing that tipped it, I think, particularly in this country, was that unique combination, that emotional connection between television and music, you know, and then when you put in something like Especially For You that complements the pictures, and it's a perfect sort of storm. And these were the days, as you know, Tim, when, you know, terrestrial TV was at its peak. Yeah. It's the 80s. You know, there's characters, there's Dynasty, there's MTV, there's Michael Jackson, there's, you know, there's Kylie, Jason. It was a sort of a very glossy, cartoonesque type of pop culture world then, you know, which ironically, when we got to the 90s, everyone went, F you, do you know what I mean? And I tell you what, when I do these concerts, right, this is the really interesting thing, is I do these concerts and I these rewind festivals, you know, and you go and sing these pop songs, people are dressed like the characters from the 80s.
Oh, brilliant.
I couldn't imagine, you know, and they're singing this song. I couldn't imagine going to a grunge festival of the 90s and having the same sort of, there was something about the 80s. There was something about that period in time that sort of reflected Neighbours' opportunity, and off it went, you know.
Well, you obviously live in Britain now. When you growing up in Australia, you just said there you'll end up in Parkinson. Does Australia look over at Britain still and go, we've got to try and make it in Britain? Is that?
Yeah. I haven't lived there for a while. But Australia, I will say, this has always sort of suffered a little bit from a small man sort of syndrome, you know. You know, it always looks over to the rest of the world to, you know, if you've made it in England or Europe or America, you know, Australia seems to go, wow, you have made it. Yet you look at what Australia has, and when I come here and everyone goes, God, why do you want to live in Britain? You know, I mean, I always used to say I came here for the pound. That's been diminishing slowly over the years. Yeah, it's a bigger market. I think the thing is, particularly for me in the 90s and the late 80s, is if you made a ripple here, it then became a wave in the rest of the world. So you sort of, you know, you make your mark here and the rest of the world sort of follows, is the point.
So
that matters a little less as you get older, because you just want to be on a beach in Byron Bay and, you know, not care about that shit, you know.
So where's home for you now? What do you feel is home? Do you feel it's here or Australia, Melbourne?
Probably here because of my kids and my family. And when I go home, I love it. I don't have a home there anymore, so I feel a little bit disconnected. I regret that, actually. I wish I'd, and maybe in the future I will. Tough to travel to Australia at the moment, though, mate. It's a real, really complex, you know. And, you know, I always say Australia's greatest asset is the fact that it is, you know, an island in the middle of the ocean in the South Pacific, and its worst nightmare is the fact that it's an island. And that's a bit like me, Tim. I always say, well, the good news is I'm Jason Donovan, and the bad news is I'm Jason Donovan. You know, when I'm trying to go for that role in, you know, The Crown, that little pivotal role, you know, but I'm okay with me.
I used to always say, I wish I was getting invited to a certain party, showbiz party. This was years ago. I wish I was getting invited to that showbiz party. But the reality is, if I was invited to the party, it's not a party I'd want to go to.
Probably right.
Too tacky. If I'm invited.
Well, you know, I don't think you've missed out on much, Tim. You know, I'm sure if you were in the backstairs corridors of Browns in the late 90s, yeah. You know, we won't need to go there.
I've been to all those places, mate. I spent a lot of my life in clubs when I was a kid. The other thing I always think is I spent time thinking about this. Would I book myself for Sunday brunch? Am I big enough to be a guest on my own show? And I sometimes think, nah, I wouldn't book me.
Well, that show's evolved. God. God, Sunday. Yeah, I mean, wow, that show has really evolved.
Do you know what I think? I keep on saying to this, I think the beauty of the show now is that the guests just love coming on. They just seem to enjoy themselves. And I was talking to a comic recently who said, it's great. You get to sell tickets to your gig. And you have a laugh and you get 3 hours just to sit there and have fun. And they say it's kind of like a good show to go on, you know, because it's a great form of promo with no pressure. So yeah, that's what we're creating.
And don't underestimate your value and Simon's value and the way, you know, you're I'm going to blow your trumpet. I mean, you're quite a seamless sort of – when you go on air on that show, you never feel like, are we actually going live at this point? Because the vocal tone never really sort of shifts from the commercial breaks into the live sort of action. But it's a comfortable show, and I know through people that I work with that it is a show that sells records. Yeah. It is a show that sells. There's only two or three that do that, you know, and yours is one of those. Sunday brunch, yeah.
Do you know what, Jason? Wow. It's funny because this is about you, not about me, but you've just picked up on something that I haven't really ever thought about. I get a lot of criticism and a lot of pushback because I don't do the showbiz thing. When the cameras go, I don't go, yeah, Jason, and take it up a pitch. Yeah. I carry on because I think I've always done Saturday and Sunday mornings, and I always think people sitting at home, it's not Saturday night TV. They don't want me to shove it in their face. And so I keep the tone. And people, there's a lot of people who don't get it because they think I'm just not interested. I'm really interested in everything. It's just I don't think I should, you know, it's always, I'm always like a tiny exaggerated version of myself when I'm on TV. Yeah. We all are, but I don't go all the way up. It's not Saturday evening.
Listen, I love the voice. I listen to the voice. I'm fascinated. When I do voiceovers, I've sung, you know, I've done a bit of radio. You know, I'm not someone who has two cans on, you know, and listens to the compression in my voice as I suddenly take a different tone because I'm starting to play. So you're sort of playing yourself. And yes, you can go up there and get really excited. We've just come. And I think that is part of your DNA, your television sort of DNA. But the show is... It's just, it feels comfortable, you know. It feels a comfortable. Sometimes I don't sleep before I do TVs. This is the truth. I get really anxious about television, yeah. But the night I came on your show a few weeks back, I slept fine. You know, I slept absolutely fine because I sort of thought, you know, I don't feel cornered. Mm. With the conversation, you know, I don't feel like I'm being interrogated, and I don't think I need to even care about that shit, but sort of I do. I don't know why. It's a weird one with me.
I've always thought with TV, I'm not looking for a headline like this podcast. I just want a conversation. I think that makes it relaxing for viewers. I get a lot of people when they've got a lot of pluggers, when they've got their first artist, they try and get them on Sunday brunch because, and sometimes I get texts from them going, it's their first time, look after them.
Yeah, yeah, understand.
And I want to look after people. Understand. I think it's my job is to make people look good and get the best out of them. So hopefully I can manage to achieve that on the show.
I think I've always, you know, I always say when you're being interviewed and having been doing it for 40 years, you know, and a lot of pluggers and people say do this and do that. I say, guys, I've probably been doing this longer than you have been doing it. I know. The thing I find frustrating about television is you start to just get your momentum and then they want to close the interview down. Do you know what I mean? You start to get inside. Now, I don't want to say this about something like Good Morning Britain, but you know, and but you know, what Piers was doing, whether you like him or not, whether he's your whatever, it was giving a conversation to people, you know, time to get an engagement in something, whether if the argument went one way. And I think that's, you know, it's important because otherwise it becomes a performance.
Yeah.
Did you understand?
Well, yeah,
it becomes like a set piece.
When the BBC moved to up to Manchester, you had all this problem, which I don't know if they've managed to sort out now, where they would go, can you come all the way to Manchester, you know,
to promote your
new theatre? And you go,
yep.
Yeah, but I'm going up there and I get 4.5 minutes. What is the bloody point? Can you guarantee me sit? And I was asked a few times. So I was like, the problem is I'm not as big as you. So at least they'll guarantee you'll get your 6-7 minutes. With me, like the last time I did GMB, I ended up having 2.5 minutes. It was a joke. Like, fortunately, it was just in London, so it didn't matter. But imagine going all the way to Manchester for 2.5 minutes. What's the point? Yeah. So that is a fundamental problem with the way those shows are working, you know? So, yeah.
Well, I think with podcasts, I think with the way we're consuming our entertainment now, I think there's competition for the terrestrial TV channels to start to be able to give a little bit more time, because we'll have other ways of, you know, finding about that person. And I believe I don't like the performance. And you know, when I go and plug something, you know, there's always the dates, there's always the, the different plugger going, can you do Priscilla or can you do Joseph or can you, you know, I'm thinking I want to do my artwork. You know, I just want to talk about the stuff that I want to talk about, you know, that you know, obviously everything counts, but you know, there's certain things I really feel very passionately about. And then, of course, there's the research chat.
Yeah.
Which I love. I was talking about this to my friend the other day, who I won't name drop, but we were having a laugh about the research chat. You go through 20 minutes cross-examine Tim, Simon, they'll talk about this, and then we'll go into the... You get on the sofa, mate. None of it happens. Nothing. Not, I've wasted 20 minutes of my life on a Friday afternoon and to get on the sofa on a Sunday and just go in a completely nice, generic, beautiful direction.
Yeah, well, I get given a load of questions. I never bother asking them. I just go with whatever I want to talk about. I just know what I'm supposed to plug. That's the kind of deal.
I understand.
Just slightly rewinding on that, you said you want to talk about your art. You did some art on Sunday Brunch,
yeah.
I thought was very good. Is this a real big thing for you? Are you trying to get a career out of doing art? Where are you at with it?
I think I've got my own style, and I think I really enjoy it. I think, in a way, it's sort of, might I say, it's a bit like my own merchandise. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a bit like my own sort of expression of where I'm at now, and it can incorporate, you know, a Priscilla, or it can incorporate Joseph, or it can just incorporate my childhood or pictures or album covers that I used to listen to or watch and try and take copy from there and writing. And so it's just, and in lockdown, you know, I had to find a different expression, you know, and I'd sat on it for years, and everyone said, you should try and do something with this. And then you go to an art dealer or a friend and says, I'm not quite sure about that, and so you get off your ass and you go, right, I'm going to put a web page up, and off you go, you know. So, yeah, I think it's I really enjoy it.
I think I should do, let me try and describe the art. It's images, and then on top of it.
Right.
It's like poetry, right?
Yeah, poetry, thoughts, lyrics, you know, words of wisdom, you know, reviews, whatever I find.
And Jason's handwriting, he does it in your own handwriting, right?
Yeah.
And it's very attractive handwriting. Where did you learn to write like that?
I think the writing came about as a result of, you know, not being particularly articulate as a as a student, or being, you know, I was never really that bright. I was a pretty average sort of student, but I always wrote quite well. And, you know, in the 90s, during those sort of darker, you know, drug days, you know, I'd spent a lot of time writing stuff, and, you know, I thought the writing could become part of the artwork, you know, learning plays. I always used to write out my words, because then it sort of sets in as a sort of memory type of thing. And, you know, then that sort of progressed to something which is a bit more refined now, you know. But it's, you know, and in my 50s, maybe that's the sort of place I might go a little bit more, you know.
We're comparing notes because we're the same age as we get in life. What's the funny thing about being on TV is I meet so many different people. You say there about being articulate. I my struggle is that I don't have enough vocabulary, and I always think, if I had I always look at someone like Stephen Fry and go, he's got so many bloody words to pick from, whereas I've got so few. And we did an item on this once, and apparently I'm on the average scale. I'm not sort of I can't think of the word. I'm not on the negative end of vocabulary, but I just watch some people, and they've got a lot of people now being put on TV, they've got no vocabulary. I mean, they're really, really struggling. But I'm always thinking, try and improve, try and get more. Whereas, so words for me are something that I find difficult, which is.
Do you read a lot? Or?
Yeah, loads, absolutely right. Loads. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Well, you should be a little bit more, you should have a bigger vocabulary probably than you do. I'm a terrible reader. I don't read a lot at all. So I read a lot of, you know, papers and but I'm not a big book reader. It's not good. Listen, you can't be as worse as the last president, put it that way. I mean, my God.
Yeah, that is weird.
Wow. I mean, that was just extraordinary.
If people want to look at your art, where do they go, Jason?
JasonDonovanArt.com. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, pretty simple.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
What were you like? What were you like at school? That's one of the questions we got here.
What was I like at school? I was, as I said, not really particularly scholastic. Is that the word? Would you say?
I've just told you.
I was, you know, I was quite good at. I thought I was good at art, although I got a shit mark. I was pretty good at politics and economics, maths. I was in the sort of, you know, I mean, we call it, sounds terrible, the veggie maths. but I was never good with numbers.
Did you play a lot of sport? Were you a sporty kid?
I was a swimmer, but not a great swimmer, because there were so many bloody good swimmers in our school. We had Olympics, you know, swimmers and Commonwealth swimmers in our school. Tennis a bit, you know. I probably could have been a bit better at that if I tried a bit more. I feel like I've got a natural football, you know, the Aussie rules, you know, you've got to be built in a certain way for Australian rules. You know, you know, these guys, you know, unless you're in the ruck, as they call it, or you're a rover or something like that. So I never really, I wasn't big team sports I struggled with, you know. But I was quite good with the school plays. You know, I always got a good part in the school play, drama. It was a Catholic boys' school in Melbourne. Good school, you know, and a good education. And I finished my high school. The irony with me, Tim, is just a quick story, was in 1984, I went to audition for this TV show on Channel 7 in Australia called Neighbours.
Right.
And I got the part. I was due to finish school in 1985. I was 17. I got this part, and it was the part of Danny Ramsey, not Scott Robinson, okay? So anyway, I got this part, and I said to my dad, who was an actor, and I said, "Dad, what do I do?" He said, "Well, you're going to have to leave school because, you know, it's a full-time gig." And I said, "Wow, that's a big one." He said, "Personally," he said, "you've done 11 years of schooling. Don't. You know, this could end in tears. It mightn't be the show that it's, you know, they think it's going to be." And I said, "Well, maybe I'll just go and ask the teachers at school." So I went and asked all my teachers, and the teachers all said, "Leave, go,
get out."
This is a too bigger opportunity to miss. You know, you'd be crazy. I said, I kept my dad's advice, and I said, "No, do you know what? I'm going to pass. And I'm going to finish my school, and then hopefully I can pursue acting," thinking, you know, like most of my dad's friends were bitter and twisted out of work actors, basically.
Yeah.
Literally 12 months to the day, right, I watched Neighbours being launched at Channel 7 and then being axed because of terrible ratings. It disappeared. 12 months to that day, I'd just finishing my exams. And I got a call from Grundy's in Australia, which is now Fremantle, and said, "Would you come on an audition for a character called Scott Robbins?"
Wow. So they cancelled it and then brought it back?
Yeah. Yeah. They cancelled the show. After 6 months, it just didn't get the traction.
Wow. That's a good decision.
Yeah. And you know, had I played Danny Ramsey, I would have been Kylie Minogue's brother. Oh, Charlene's brother. Now, that would have been a really weird incarnation.
We've talked about fitness, and we talked about you being at school and stuff like that. What is your routine then? Let's say, what makes you you? What do you do fitness wise and diet wise? Are you very careful with it all?
I'm not careful. I'm just sort of balanced more than anything. I think. What do? I like to steam, particularly for my voice. You know, I've sort of had a few little moments with my voice over the years that have been interesting. Struggling with a bit of it today. I do a lot of stretching. I had a few back issues. I mean, this is all part and parcel of getting older, I suppose.
Yeah.
But my main thing is riding my bike. I always ride my bike wherever I have to go. If I have to go into town, I'll ride. I do have a scooter, but I find, you know, it's quicker to get into London now on a push bike than it is any other sort of form. And I've been doing that since, you know, I came here in 1989. I think I probably got my first bike in 1990 here. What else? I swim. I eat food-wise. You know, I've never struggled with my weight. So, you know, and that's because I can't sit still. I'm always moving. What else? You know, I'm someone who goes to bed pretty early. You know, I'm not big on going out. You know, I mean, particularly in the last sort of 12 months, that sort of you know, killed all that. We don't, you know, we don't do massive sort of dinners and, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, I love a good restaurant. I'm up pretty early. So I love taking the kids to school. We talked about that before. I really enjoy that. I really enjoy picking my daughter up. And, you know, my oldest is now 21 and my son is 20. So, you know, I like to be as involved with them while I can. You know, they say, you know, for people when they're at the point of their lives where they can't really turn back, what are the things that you feel you could have done? And one of them is spent more time with your children, you know, and that's what I'm going to do, mate, because yeah. I can, you yeah. know, I can.
Well, having my oldest children are 19 and my youngest is 8, and second time round I'm much more engaged. And the second time round I realize it's the mundane crap is the bit I enjoyed. I like the changing the nappy stuff because you're just one on one with your child. I love the school run. I like sitting on the side of a pool these days watching my daughter swim. You know, that crap where it's just you and them and then getting them changed afterwards and all that sort of stuff, rather than taking them to Disneyland and stuff like that. I can do without all that rubbish, you know. It's the bit I like is the mundane. Should we have dinner?
Should we
do some homework? I don't want to. Come on, let's do it. Let's try and do it. That's the bit I really get off on now, because I think that's the bit where you're close, as you're saying, and spending more time. It's the mundane stuff. But, you know, that's just I'm a mundane type of guy, Jason. That's why.
I also, Tim, I love my garden. You know, I really, really enjoy my garden. I love spending time. You know, lockdown has taught me that. Well, I mean, we're quite fortunate. We have another property. So, you know, I just enjoy mowing my lawn and trimming my hedge. I was going to say bush then at one point. But, you know, and I love, it's like art to me, you know, when the lawn is cut and framed and the garden looks great. It's like a painting to me. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to get a bit left field here because it's my favorite question. Have you ever seen a ghost or a UFO?
No. I think as a kid once, I felt when I was a kid once, my dad and I were sleeping at a friend of his place, and I thought I saw a vision of someone in a door. I mean, you know, the 90s were a pretty hallucinogenic period for me, and there was a lot of things I think I thought I saw, but I'm pretty sure the substance was taking control of my heightened state, Tim, at that particular point in time. I'm not a big believer in that. I'm a bit of a science person, and it always worries me slightly when they talk about UFOs being seen just over America.
Yeah, I'm fascinated with it all at the moment, though. I spent a lot of time reading it, and I think I'm on a little WhatsApp group with two mates who are really into.
So why haven't we touched base with these people? What it seems extraordinary in a population of billions and billions that it's a secret. Why is it a secret? Why would they be so secretive? I don't understand that.
In what way? Why? What, the aliens?
Well, why? Yeah, if
they are aliens. Because we don't know they're aliens.
Loch Ness was supposed to be this monster, and I think some guy on his deathbed said, "I mocked the shot up." So we were under this illusion that Loch Ness was this sort of, you know, and in fact, it was just someone, you know, with a great degree in art direction.
Yeah. Though we don't know they're aliens. They could be Chinese or Russian, but I mean, by the looks of things, the way they move, according to the US, I can't believe I'm having this conversation, but I'm going to. The way it moves is, you know, they don't move like anything we've seen at the moment. However, when we're sending probes to Mars, we're not sending humans up there, are we? We're sending probes. So these could be probes. And not only that, I don't know if you remember, there's this tribe in, I'm not sure where it is now. I'd have to look it up. And they've not been touched for God knows how many years. So they're just there with their bow and arrows. And this bloke decided to go there recently to teach them Christianity, and they shot him. Do you remember this? They put arrows in him.
Yeah, I heard about that.
So they have no contact with them. But we're not bothering. We're just leaving them and sometimes flying over them, observing them. So is there a reason why they would come and speak to us? I mean, why they could just be observing us, like with, you know.
Sure. I don't rule it out, but I'm not a big... And I don't think it's a conspiracy theory, what you're talking about, but I'm not a big, I'm a bit of a fact sort of, you know, guy, and I believe in the science. I think, why haven't they shown, you know? But, you know, you say, I say that, and then, you know, I often sit around and think, wow, what, you know, how did we come about? You know, there's a lot of questions, yeah. You know, and... But I tell you one thing, as I get a little bit older, I'm not a religious person at all, you know, but I believe in the sun.
What about the sun?
The sun is our energy. Yeah. And that's another thing that people do. I've seen some pictures of people in their latter part of their lives with their faces to the sun, you know, with you know, you know, I think there's something about the sun that holds the key to a lot of stuff. It's a burning ball of gas, and it just keeps burning, man. How did that happen?
Oh, it's going to burn out one day. the thing about
shit,
the
bit like my career.
And mine. The thing about the UFO though is that I'm on a WhatsApp group with some mates, and we like talking about it. And the one thing, because none of us really. Kind of, we don't believe in it because like you, there's no science, there's no evidence. However, it's getting more interesting all the time. We've been talking about this for a few years, a couple of my mates and me, because I like getting involved in just reading about it. But I also read about time travelers and ghosts and everything. I like reading it all, and I don't believe in any of it at the moment. But the one thing about it is, if you follow it through and do a little bit of a thought experiment, the aliens come down. The very last thing you're going to do is go, Boris is our leader now. You're going to go, get rid of that bloke immediately. you know, can you imagine if Trump or Biden, you're going to go, none of these guys can lead. We need a proper leader. We need adults and smart people now. You'd be looking around going, you know, God, can Elon do it? Elon Musk? I mean, who do we need? We need someone. And, you know, China probably loved the Communist Party, so they'll probably feel they've got strength in leadership there. Russians probably love Putin and go there. We're stuck because none of we're divided as a West. Where are we going? Who's going to lead us out of this crap if the aliens arrive? And I think that's a really interesting. And then do we care about capitalism and globalization if the aliens arrive? So that's why we quite like having, we like doing the thought experiments of who you're going to have lead you through it if they arrive.
Wow, that's an interesting path that I haven't thought about. I mean, I'm, you know, trying to get my head around this pandemic, let alone a couple of aliens, you know. but I don't rule it out. I always sort of go, why it always slightly seems to be an American, you know, in the desert somewhere, and, you know, and I don't know. I just want to, why isn't it in, you know, West London? You know, why haven't I seen an alien in West London?
Sadly, I sat down with a financial consultant the other day, and we were trying to work out my retirement plan. And
my
plan A is alien invasion. I'm going to join the Earth Freedom Fighters. I don't have a plan B, so I need them to come within the next 10 years.
Maybe they'll pay for your pension, Tim. You know what I mean? Yeah, or at least you'll be able to write a book about it and do the talk show circuit, you know.
I need something to change because capitalism's not working for me at the moment. Just a couple more questions before we finish the hour. We've talked to you, you've mentioned the word a lot during this interview, so let's do it. What does success mean to you? I just want to say on a point we were talking about doing my show earlier. When your name comes up, Jason, it's Simon and myself, you know, he'd agree on this as well. It's one of those things you go, ah, it's Jason, brilliant, because you know you've got a person who's going to engage, and you know you're friendly, and you always got something to talk about, and it just an kind, interesting.
Good. That's nice to know.
Well, you're an interesting person. I wonder if that has something to do with success. People still want you around when you started in 1986 on Neighbours. People still want you around all these years later.
Well, I mean, that makes me feel like I have success, you know, in a way, by just that conversation. As I said, you know, many times, and, you know, anyone that listens to this that knows me, I keep saying, how do you measure success? I don't know. I don't know, you know, and I honestly don't know. Is it financial? No, but God, you know, having a bit of money certainly helps. It's not the be all and end all, as we know. You know, your health is so important. We've seen this in the last 12 months. You know, it's so important to keep physically fit. You know, I've seen, you know, friends of mine, you know, with incredible wealth and success and fame, and but sort of, there's nothing there, you know. There's, you know, that they'll sit in a 12-bedroom house and drive the best-looking car and go for holidays in the Med on their yacht, but are struggling to find the friends that would spend time because all their mates are married and have got kids, you know. And they don't want to be partying in Saint-Tropez or, you know, in Mallorca or Ibiza. I don't know. I honestly don't know. It's surely... the word balance is a really interesting word in life. You know, it's a really interesting word. It's a really interesting word, trying to keep a good balance between, and I'm going to go back to my school, that inner world and the outer world, and trying to, physical fitness definitely is part of that. Definitely, 100%. But, you know, I won't complain. You know, it's really nice to have, you know, to be able to put my kids through some good education and you know, have the trappings of hard work. I'm not going to say that doesn't, you know, make my life more comfortable, but does it necessarily make me more happy? Not really. The more you got, the more complicated it is.
Yeah, I agree.
It is.
I keep telling my mates. It is. Stop buying it stuff. Is. Let's get rid of everything. Yeah, I read something the other day, Jason.
Do that.
Yeah, I read something the other day.
As you get older, you go, you start to get rid of the stuff.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go.
No, that's true. You do. You accumulate it all.
Accumulate.
And then you go, all this crap?
What's crap? Yeah. What were you going to say? Sorry, mate.
I read this thing the other day and it's really stuck with me. I can't stop thinking about it. And I'm sure it's really old, but it's the first time I read it. It says, love people, use stuff. And I thought that was really interesting because so many of us, and I'm sure we've all been this, where you think use people, love stuff. It's the wrong way around. You've got to love humans and then just everything you get in your life, it's like, is it got a use or am I just buying it to say, hey, look at me, I've got a fancy something, you know, and it's, it should have a use. And it's really stuck with me that, and I keep thinking about it. I can't get that off my brain. So last question, Jason, what is the meaning of life?
Well, the first thing that comes to life is no risk, no magic.
No risk, no magic.
I don't know why I said that.
I love it.
It just, no risk, no magic, you know. Yeah. We take a risk every day, don't we? You know, what is the meaning of life? I don't know why I threw that quote in there. What is the meaning of life? I don't know. But I think maybe, you know, the only thing that comes to my mind is that we come in with nothing and we leave with nothing. So, you know, I don't know what happens in between. Living.
Well, you've had quite an adventure. Jason, thank you very much for joining me today. That's been brilliant. I've really enjoyed that. Thanks a lot, mate.
Great, man.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.